The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Ireland is increasingly susceptible to espionage, cyber and critical infrastructure attacks. That's according to a government defence assessment. Now, these attacks could pose a threat to the public and private sectors, along with fostering a distrust in the government on behalf of foreign actors. Now, to tell us more, John O'Brennan, Jean Monnet, Professor of European Integration at Maynooth University. John, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So what has the report identified as to our susceptibility to attack?
Well, the report comes on the back of what I think has been the broadest discussion about defence and security that we've ever had. You may recall last year there was a consultative forum on international security, and that followed on from a commission on the future of the defence forces. So this is where it's supposed to translate to policy. Now, I think the simple truth is that Ireland is a long way behind where it needs to be, whether you look at it in terms of being able to defend ourselves in the way that, for example, Austria, as another neutral state in Europe, does. It spends about 4 billion euros a year. We spend less than a billion. And the kind of threats that the defense forces review, I don't think they will surprise us. Firstly, maritime security and protecting critical infrastructure. It talks about cyber threats and hybrid threats of different kinds. It talks about climate change as a security threat, as well as things like energy security, espionage, and critical raw materials. So it is the most expansive kind of analysis, you could argue, of the threat landscape. But the key question for me, Pat, is what does Ireland actually do in the future? And I think that the level of ambition contained within this report is just far too timid relative to the scale of the challenges that the report actually identifies.
Now, who are the malign actors who'd have a go at us? We point the finger all the time at Russia. Are there others?
Well, we know that Russia operates in particular in the cyber and hybrid domains. And if you go back, for example, to 2021, May of that year, the attack on the HSE, that was traced back to a Russian criminal gang, not to the Kremlin, but it's just inconceivable that any group of that kind could operate on Russian territory without having the imprimatur of the Kremlin. The Russian government, of course, can maintain plausible deniability. I think that was a perfect example of the new kind of threats that we face. We've seen it with hacking as well of commercial companies, for profit and things of that kind. So there's been a dramatic change in the threat landscape over the last 20 years. And this report, I think, is really about playing catch up.
Now, you mention cyber and hybrid. What's a hybrid threat?
Well, the hybrid threat is something that may have elements of conventional sort of military activity combined with the kind of things that I was just talking about, the activities of non-state actors, and it may well have commercial application much more than any kind of military application. So it's this combination of overt and covert activity that is designed to attack critical infrastructure, for example, electricity, utility companies of different kinds, but not specifically a military target that we might have thought about in the past.
Now, we are studiously and very publicly neutral in our standing in international relations. Does that give us zero protection, that kind of posturing?
Well, I think the report makes clear that in the past, we may have been right in thinking that geography combined with military neutrality gave us these significant layers of protection. That simply isn't the case anymore with the new threat landscape that we're facing. And I've argued for many years that viewed from Moscow, Ireland is certainly not viewed as a neutral state. We're part of the European Union. We're close to the United States and the United Kingdom. And we're also increasingly at the center of the tech world. Some years ago, in producing the Global Ireland Report, Leo Varadkar referred to Ireland as an island at the center of the world. And in economic terms, if you think about how outward facing we are, that translates to real vulnerability when it comes to our security. And we simply haven't been paying enough attention to that.
Mm. Now, the question of vulnerability of our data centers. Now, we know we have a problem anyway with the amount of our electricity generated or purchased that goes into fueling data centers. But we are, if you like, at the heart of the digital international scene. So perhaps we need all of these data centers to be credible in that regard. But the attacks on them, there are obviously two ways in. One is to somehow get infected data into the center and try to corrupt the center in that way. But I suspect those kind of protections are well in place.
They are, I suspect, and I think companies are learning all the time, you know, from the attacks that come from some of these non-state actor groups. But we saw last Friday with that dramatic outage that was a global one that if when something like this happens, it causes major problems. Now, that, as far as we know, was an accident. It wasn't as a result of a deliberate attack by one of these groups. But it did demonstrate, I think, again, the great vulnerability of a world that now relies so much on data and where we're all so interconnected and interdependent. And the report makes that clear in chapter after chapter, that interdependence translates to a responsibility to defend that infrastructure. And I would argue that it's not just in Ireland's self-interest to do so. It's also because we have obligations to our EU partners. We're part of the European Union. We've been the recipients of a net amount of more than 40 billion euros since we joined the EEC in 1973. And we have responsibilities to our partners. At the moment, the traffic is all in the other direction. Our skies are patrolled by the RAF. Our seas are patrolled very often by our partners in Europe because we're only capable of putting one or two ships to sea. That has to come to an end. And in order for that to happen, I think we have to be much more ambitious. The report is talking about us leading to spending 1.5 billion euros potentially by 2028. But that just isn't good enough. If you look at Austria as the only other really prominent neutral state in Europe, it spends 3.5 to 4 times the amount that we do. So we have got to increase the level of spending, I think, if we're to tackle these threats effectively.
Now, we live in a connected world, and that's the issue, I suppose, at the heart of the data centers. It's okay to have the data stored, but you've got to get it out to your customers or get it from your customers for storage. And that makes the physical infrastructure susceptible to interference, whether it's a chopped cable, you know, someone burrows into the ground knowing the root of the cable or gets into a duct and severs that cable, or undersea. Where you have submarines of nations who would not have our interest at heart, who might do for those cables.
Yeah, and of course, over the last 2 to 3 years, we have seen increasing Russian activity, and the strong suspicion is that they were on reconnaissance missions. In other words, they weren't going into our territorial waters and our EEZ, as it's called, to do anything specifically malign, but they were surveying what was there, and they were able to do it because we have no sonar capability in those territorial waters. The government is proposing to make changes here around military radar, and that's important, but we are incredibly vulnerable. If you think back to one of the first instances where the Russian fleet was spotted off Ireland, it was our fishermen that went out to confront them rather than our navy. And that simply has to change. We have to have the capacity to defend our territorial waters, and we simply don't have it at the moment.
Now, when you say this document is a bit timid in its ambition, how should it change? I mean, going from one ship to how many ships? Going from zero fighter aircraft to what? Spending, how much more do we need to spend? And where would that money come from? In other words, what would we sacrifice in our budgets to pay for all of this defence?
Well, firstly, the Exchequer is overflowing with money. That cannot be an excuse. It has been used, I think, far too often as an excuse in the past. There are a whole lot of different things we have to do. The Navy is at its lowest level of recruitment that I think we've ever seen in the modern era. The Defense Forces as a whole are barely, the numbers barely reach 8,000. That has to be improved significantly. That means recruitment and retention. We have to also have things like airlift capacity. You may recall that in Somalia last year and in Afghanistan before that, we had lots of Irish citizens that were stranded and we had no way of bringing them home. We had to effectively beg rides from our European partners who did have the airlift capacity. So these are the kind of things that we have to invest in. And yes, it will take money. We do need more ships and we do need the capacity to man those ships rather than have our partner states do it for us.
Now, you mentioned countries that might do it well, and you say Austria manages to have constructed a defense apparatus that will protect that territory. We are in a different situation. Number one, we have part of our geographical territory, which is run by another jurisdiction, which is outside the EU. And secondly, being an island with a massive coastline and a huge economic marine zone to be protected. I mean, is it beyond our capabilities? Like loads of money, but we don't seem to be able to spend it. We have hospital waiting lists. We have transport deficits. We have housing deficits. Loads of money, but no ability to spend it.
Well, firstly, this isn't an either or. And if I was talking to you about education or health, I'd be saying exactly the same thing. We have these critical deficiencies. We've now identified them. There is a roadmap forward from here, and that, I think, is what we should be doing. I think a lot of our reluctance actually does come down to some of the things that you're referencing, the fact that we are an island, the fact that, you know, we haven't had a conventional war in our proximity in a very long time. I think we have a childish and emotional attitude to neutrality. And we were never neutral from the beginning of the state in 1921. And I think we have to take our obligations seriously, both the obligation to defend our own country, but to also contribute to our economy and to contribute to the defense of our partner countries who do so much with us around Europe.
What do you make of the head of the British Armed Forces suggesting that the armed forces there have 3 years to get ready for war?
Yeah, I think that reference is clearly to Ukraine and the potential for Russia to win there and to then increase its aggression and to target other states like the Baltic states and others. I think he's right. I think that threat is a very real one. It will become even more real if Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are in the White House next January. Europeans, as well as our British colleagues, have got to start thinking about security in a much deeper way. The simple truth, Pat, is that the United States has been the military protector of Europe since NATO was founded in 1949. If Trump and Vance decide to take the United States out of NATO or to make Article 5 of NATO inoperable, that's all over. That world is finished. That is hugely attractive to Putin and to his acolytes. And I think we're absolutely facing that kind of threat if Trump and Vance win in November and end up in the White House. So we have to think about these things very carefully. And I think that's another reason for reaching the maximum level of ambition that we can in respect of defense and security protection.
Do you believe that we're just too small-minded in our view of ourselves? I mean, we always regard ourselves as a tiny country. But when you start seeing the population now, and if you look at the whole island as a population, we're as big as many other countries in Europe, and perhaps we should be pulling our weight. And I'm thinking also of energy security. One of our listeners pointing out how vulnerable we might be. I mean, suppose in 20 years' time, most of our energy is coming from offshore wind. How vulnerable are those windmills to attack?
Yeah, I think that point is absolutely right. And it's another reason why we have to invest seriously in protecting that kind of critical infrastructure. We're still far too dependent on fossil fuel energy and the import of energy into the country. But I think your point about insularity is also very interesting, because I think it does link to neutrality. And it's actually completely at odds with the changed position that Ireland finds itself in the world. We have one of the most open economies in the world. We have a very open society. Almost 20% of our population now was born overseas. And we have such close links to and economic interdependence with our partner countries in Europe, that I think the case is a very straightforward one that we should do as much as we possibly can, even relative to the resource constraints that you describe, to improve our security capacity, both for ourselves and for to support that interdependence.
John O'Brien, Jean Monnet, Professor of European Integration at Maynooth University, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.